one. And I ask your indulgence and your understanding. I hope I will phrase things properly and delicately, that you will be able to appreciate the Shia. I hope to be there for the final myself. Whatever goes beyond the Shabbos will not be on the final. So there'll be certain things we have to go after the Adam of the Shabbos and other things. And of course, it will not be on the final. Your indulgence and your understanding, I hope I will phrase things properly and delicately, that you will be able to appreciate the Shia. I hope to be there for the final myself. Whatever goes beyond the Shabbos will not be on the final. So there'll be certain things we have to go after the Adam of the Shabbos and other things. And of course, it will not be on the final. As I mentioned to you in the past weeks, Rav Neubert Shalita, whose bar we've been using the entire year, Shmira Shabbos Kilchasa, told me person when I met him that the Shlomo Zalman Zatzal, his Rebbe Mubuk, advised him to leave out of Shmir Shabbos Beis the laws of what he calls Tara, purification, on Shabbos and Arab Shabbos. And therefore he printed it, was ready set to go to print in Shmir Shabbos Beis, the same kind of a print, the same kind of footnotes, the whole same story. He printed it in a separate volume called O.L. Sarah. Which is the memory of his mother. His name was Sarah. And it was put out, I don't know what year it was put out. I don't even know what year the... I think the Shmir Shabbos Beis came out, I think, in Tav Shin Mem Zayin, I think. This is already a second edition of Tav Shin Nun. I don't know when the first edition came out. So obviously it's around... 8 years old, some of that's 6 years old. Okay. The halacha is, this gives you some very basic information that I assume you all know by now, but nevertheless, that a woman has a monthly cycle, and after a certain amount of preparation, including siktara, when the period stops, she gets a clean bedikah, what we call, and she waits what we call 7 clean days. We'll discuss this later on for those who want to stay. Then she goes to the mikveh. She goes to the mikveh at night. Nowadays, the mikveh is, we'll discuss that later. One of the main things of this Shabbos thing of discussion is that the mikveh is always at night. Let me give you some backup because it's a little bit important to understand what's flying over here. By Torah law. If a woman has to wait for 7 clean days, whenever that happens, the mikveh may be used even by day. The famous principle, which we know from other areas of Allah, is the Avelis. So you mostly know it from there. Called mikveh sayom kekulo. Ever been in some of this, unfortunately, a sitting shiva, and then the shiva is over the morning of the 7th day. You ever noticed that? Must have had some come across it somewhere. You're going to go to a Levi, they'll get up from shiva Tuesday morning. It's Tuesday morning. It's called the middle of morning. What's flying? The answer is that it's mitzvah sayom kekulo. That it should really be the whole day of Tuesday, but if you have shiva for an hour or whatever, a little amount of time, that counts for the whole day. Similarly, when it comes to a woman who's counting 7 clean days, so by Torah law, the principle applies mitzvah sayom kekulo. She could count whatever counting means, a bedika in the morning of the 7th day, and go to the mikvah that morning. However, the Rechazal said you're not allowed to do that. For various reasons. The basic reason was that if you do that, they're afraid that what can happen is that they can come to a complete disaster. Because what happened if a woman will go to the mikveh in the morning of the 7th day, of the 7 clean days, and then she'll be with her husband in the afternoon? We don't do it because it's reasons of sneers, but that's nothing wrong with it in the strict sense. And then she'll have a re-onset of a period or something of this nature in the late afternoon. So the halacha states that in case she becomes a status, she gets a status of nida retroactively. So if you never went through a seven clean day, the seventh day, mitzvah zayot kula works, provided it's going to be clean the rest of the day. But if not, then not. So in order to ward off this potential disaster of a really very serious prohibition, when the status of nida could come back in a retroactive sense, the rabbi said, A, if she went to the mikvah, she's not permitted to be with the husband that day, and B, she shouldn't be going to the mikvah that day at all, because we're afraid. Once she goes to the mikvah, she'll say, oh, I went to the mikvah. So I'm not afraid of this happening. It's not going to happen to me. It never happened before. It won't happen again. And therefore, they prohibit her from going to the mikvah on the seventh day of the seventh clean day. Torah law is permissible. Rabbinic law says prohibited. But they went further than that. They said even a woman who's now, let's say, the eighth clean day, but there's no such thing, no such concept, really. Once the 7 days are up, they're up. But now it's the next day, what we call the eighth day. She now wants to go to the mikvah by day. Now look, she could have gone already last night. Right? But she couldn't go because it was snowing. I don't know what. She just couldn't get out. So she'll now want to go on the eighth day. So what could be better than that? Either she is with her husband on that day, and then she sees blood later in the afternoon. But still wouldn't be a retroactive state of nida because the time was up already yesterday. It's not mixing up the cooler with this case. Well, you're right. What's called Zera Mishum Srach Bicho. They're afraid of the confusion which will arrive with her daughter. What do you mean her daughter? Her daughter will see the mother going to the mikvah by day. And the daughter will not realize this is the eighth day as opposed to the seventh day. So when the daughter gets married, she'll go to the mikvah by day the seventh day, not realize that she'll go on the eighth day. And then she'll go to the mikvah the seventh day, and then she'll be with her husband, and then there'll be blood, and then there'll be an Issacharis in retrospect. So it sounds like it's a little bit of crazy Xero, but the Chazal are very careful in these matters. So therefore, by seventh day is very bad, and eighth day is pretty bad. And the difference being, when it comes to the eighth day, the Gemara says she's permitted to go by day if she can't go by night. I mean, she can't go by night. A few examples are given in the Gemara. There are lions out in the night. I'm not kidding. Look at the Gemara's example. Arye Vosa. Lions are prowling the streets at night. Can't go out at night. Or Ganve. They're listed. There are bandits prowling the streets at night. Or they had in some cities, in their Shulchan Aruch quotes, they locked the gates at night. They locked the doors and they couldn't go out at night. Finished. The gates were locked. So of course, in such a case, they're permitted to go by day. But it's only in a case in which you could not go the night before, nor could you go the night after. And obviously, if you go the night after, why should they give you the dispensation to go by day? Just wait till the night, since not great a practical difference anyway. So therefore, that's our law. Let's repeat. The seventh day, so far we're saying, is absolutely out of bounds, with no exceptions so far. The eighth day, there is an exception in the case where a woman cannot go the night after the seventh or the night after the eighth. She can go the intervening day, which we'll call the eighth day. Fine. So obviously, for this is one of the main reasons why it's important, if at all possible, that every community should have a mikvah. Aside from the fact that every community should be self-sufficient as much as possible. But beyond that, if the mikvah does not exist in the community, then the woman who's fine for tefillah is Friday night. She's stuck, she can't go, because she's too far away. She can't get there. And she really should not go Friday by day, because Friday is the seventh day. There's no head to go whatsoever. Whatever we've learned so far. Okay, this is a background. Okay.
Really?
Yes.
Can she go the seventh day in the morning, let's say during the day, and then wait till that night to be with her husband? This way, this is
well, that's exactly the seventh Shulchan Aruch. No, she can't go the seventh day, period. Even she's not going to be with her husband till the night, because they were afraid that she will be with him, and then there will be a time afterwards. They're afraid of all these things happening. Okay, that's background. With this background, I'm now going to turn my attention to the Sefer Ohel Sarah and go to Seder. We mentioned before in passing that Lachol Hefsek Tara, that whenever the period comes to an end and a woman can get a clean bidika by inserting a cloth internally, she should do so, and that's starting the next day. That's when the Hefsek Tara, that's when the Shiva Nakiya, the 17 days begin. Now, an interesting question. What's the last moment to do the Heftikah? The very last deadline, I had a shout about this today in the Yeshiva. The last deadline is what we call sunset. The sunset is found in the New York Times, when the sun sinks beneath the horizon, that's what we call Shkia. After that point, you can no longer do Heftikah. What happens if a woman is Mekabel Shabbos early? Can she do a Heftikah thereafter? The sun is still shining high in the sky. Especially relevant this question nowadays. Many of you have a custom that they have early Shabbos in the summertime. You know, it's so late at night. We have an early Shabbos. So we have an early Shabbos. So a woman accepted upon herself what we call early Shabbos, and she lit candles, and who knows, maybe she got a mincha, myrib, and they take her away, and they make kiddush. All of a sudden she figured, whoops, I never made my hefsetara. I forgot. You know, hectic Arab Shabbos, you know, it was a tumult. May she do it now? Now it's already after the sun, before the sunset. But it's after the time when they already accepted Shabbos. What's the story? So there's a major dispute. Some say that it's too late. And some say no. She still may make a hefsetara subsequently. And in the Sefer Shmuel Sara, he calls a dispute about this. Some say yes, and some say no. And he says, so we call B'Shas HaTchak, which is always B'Shas HaTchak, right? It's permissible to rely upon these more lenient view, which is that as long as the sun hasn't set yet, she can still make the hefsetara. These shilas, you should not think are arcane shilas. What happened today? I would have forgot to make it 2 minutes after the sun set, I thought it's too late. Another shot I have. There is a din, it's all Hilchos Shabbos. I mean, some of these things. There is a din that a woman, ideally, the Chatchila, she make a Hefsetara, is supposed to insert during what we call the Bein HaShemashim, between the sunset and the time the stars come out, I'd say about a half an hour or so, which is called in Hebrew a Mos Dochu. Some kind of a cloth that they use to bedik or something. Tampon, different things that they put in the area. But in case of any dam will come out, it'll be spotted on this was called a moto. And I had to shout on the phone. Not on the phone. Someone asked me this kind of shot, but it's right within the last week for sure. Someone asked me, Halacha Lemaisa, what is the din? If there's no Arab in town, if the woman is going to be mad at anyone who learned Tzotzah, I may have mentioned briefly, but I'll tell you we'll discuss it later. But the Shemir Shabbat talks about it in the regular segment. He mentioned it very briefly. So he says, two opinions. It doesn't say who's right. Two opinions. He tells you to look over there and say, Shmir Shabbos, he refers to himself. That's a bit awesome. He refers to himself. Shmir Shabbos, because that's a very good class of our people. And some say it's prohibited, some say it's permissible, and I thought it's prohibited. Based on my analysis of the source, I thought it was not allowed. It's not there to protect her body. If a woman is in the middle of a period, and then it certainly would protect her body from getting dirty. But it said, no, the period is over, just petering out, a drop here, there, nothing. She's not looking to protect her body. For halachic reasons. So halachic reasons, I don't think she's allowed to go out in no area with this moch. But she has to go out. Good. So do without a moch. A moch is not absolutely required. A moch is a chatchil, it's ideal. But if there's a reason why you should not do it, so you should do it. Here's the reason, you have to go out. There's a Shabbos, there's no area. I don't know the Shabbos, just today, and it's a few hours on the yeshiva. A woman had problems, she would do it with a moch, and she'd keep cutting herself. And then she starts doing this. Don't do it. This smoke is only ideally for an ideal situation. And it causes wounds, and you shouldn't do it at all. So here's another case where if you have to go out, there's no air. I would say if you do without it. Okay. Now, here's a big problem. Usually, we'll go to the mikveh at night, so she makes all of her preparations just before she goes to the mikveh. She's going to go to the mikvah 9 o'clock at night, the winter it gets dark at 5. She can't go till 9 for whatever reason. So she'll make her achanas just before 8:30 or 8 o'clock. She'll start bathing and whatever else, combing the hair and whatever else, between the nails, whatever the achanas are necessary before going to the mikvah. What happens if it's on Shabbos? Hey, obviously you can't do these things on Shabbos. So what do? So he passes over here. Should make all the hachanas before Shabbos. But you should do them slowly. But it's almost a contradiction in terms. You know what a Jewish household is like on Friday afternoon? What's kind of slow? You're after a big kiddush. It's better to do whatever you can in the morning. Yes? In the morning. And, you know, certain basics you should do in the morning. And then in the afternoon, she should bathe, or if she can't bathe in the afternoon, it's such a heck of a crazy thing, she should just bathe in the morning and shower in the afternoon. Because, you know, it's a very serious issue over here. It gets very hectic before Shabbos. And even a woman who usually does, there are many women, they do all their preparation in the mikvah itself. They don't want to do anything in the house, you know, all of a sudden, after, who knows what season people don't look blind. And we should tamate tzinius. Purpose of modesty, a woman who's gone to the mikvah should not know, should know about it. And even the members of her family, the obvious exception of her husband, even the members of her family should not know about it, not her parents, not her children, not her siblings, not her this, not her, but her gosh, a private matter. She ordinarily made it possible, she doesn't do any preparations at home. People are gonna, so she does it in the mikvah itself, they have a shift, they have a bath there, they have a shower, they're in the mikvah. But on Friday, you can't do that. Because you can walk to the mikvah from the after dark and you can't do that anymore because it's already too late. She has no choice, she has to make the hachanas at home. It's a question of sneers. Do it in the morning. Do it in the morning, whatever has to be done. Even though we try to make the chafitah, we call it the preparation close to the tefillah as possible, but you can't help it in this case. You can't help it. Okay. There's someone who lives far away from the mikvah. Far away. And they want to drive to the mikvah. Or they can camp to the mikvah. And then they'll wait around until the time to go away. We'll discuss later what the time is. And then they'll walk back. So you're allowed to do that. But don't cut it too close. You know, don't come in a minute before the shkia in the car. That'll be terrible. Give yourself a little extra time. And you can light candles before you leave, but it's not. We discussed this at way in the beginning. Oh, back in, whatever it was, October. November, way in the beginning, we talked about how about making a condition. You're lighting candles with the express intention not to accept the fire yourself, Shabbos. That you can do.
You have your husband light for
me? That's another possibility. Yes, that can happen. That's fine. Once you complete your preparations for Tevila, it's proper not to eat, not to drink, but to touch things which are going to cause subsequent chatzitzes, not to put on lipstick and all kinds of things with chashash chatzitza. I had a shayla, I'm not kidding, this is a shayla I had yesterday. Yesterday a shayla like this. A woman is going out of town for a bar mitzvah. I think out of the country for a bar mitzvah. That's going to be a big shebang. And she's required to go, she had time for the mikvah next Friday, this coming Friday night. She wants to know, she has to rabbi, can she go by day? Day. You can't go by day, you can't go by day. Yeah, but then what's the problem? What's the problem? She bought the mikvah? No! I think maybe it was Toronto, right near a mikvah. You know, there's a mikvah 2 blocks away. What's the problem? Oh, you have a big problem. It's called lipstick. That was the problem. I can't do the makeup. Here she's coming to this big bar mitzvah. I think she's an aunt or something, and she's, you know, really, really. Here's going to walk in there with no makeup, no lip. What's it going to be? So here's the bar, it's a beautiful Shiloh. I love the Shiloh, this rabbi told me. She's not vain. That's a Shiloh. It's not vanity at all, it's sneers. Because if she walks into the meal on Friday with no lipstick, what are people going to think? Why does she have lipstick? They're going to figure out, aha, I know why she has no lipstick, because she must have gone to the mikvah. And it's nobody's business. That's why she wanted a cooler, she should go by day, so she can cook it with the lipstick on. Time. It was a beautiful shayla. Shayla of sneers. I said no. can't do it. I mean, we didn't see it, so. But the day, you can't do it. Like, let her wait, go in there, let her postpone the tefillah night. We never let her postpone the tefillah of anything. So let her just say, I forgot my lipstick at home. I don't know what she'll say. I she'll put the. I said, it's half a jest. Let her get a goya to come with her to the to put on her makeup. So all these things. Did I pay this door by the other side? Shame. Did I pay this door? Someone told me. I thought I paid this door. Was the other class? I thought. Man, I never said this story. I was told that in Yerushalayim, major social scene, Sukkot. So especially buyers and tenants are unsatisfied, unfulfilled, and anything can happen. Whereas hopefully, because it has a happy marriage, this will never happen. I mean, it really is true. A man has a happy marriage, and it's a little bit of a bar seichel, so he is not mamish bal time, and he will not give in to various seductions or various, drives. That might lead him to sin outside the context of his happy marriage. Unfortunately, it's mostly unhappy marriage and no marriage. That's what the Shulchan Aruch said. She should be married. And the unwritten statement should be happily married. Beyond that, this is not limited to Friday night, it's not limited to Shabbat, but we're discussing this in Yom HaTzniyos. You have to be careful how you speak to your wife. Even in discussing matters with your wife, even if no one else is there, you have to be careful what you say. People are, talks color language. It's not appropriate. It's not appropriate. Shulchan Aruch writes that a man is permitted to speak to his wife in a certain way if he finds it necessary to arouse within himself a drive which will enable him to fulfill the mitzvah properly. But the truth of the matter is that many healthy males don't have a problem. They're probably the other way around. Their problem is not arousing themselves, but their problem is not to be too much aroused, which would lead to negative consequences on all levels. Chalila v'chas outside the realm of the mitzvah, and even within the mitzvah itself, if the man is not in control of himself, he just can't have proper control of his own goof, then he's not able to perform the mitzvah properly. Properly means, the Chazal way ahead of the goyim. Maybe if you don't know about these things, if you do, you don't. But in the goyish Welt, until recently, they never understood that what's involved in terms of the female biological system in terms of the marital relationship. You know why? Because they're a bunch of chayis. The goyim are a bunch of chayis. Chayis means that they view the woman as an object. That's all. Chayis. This is how the goyish Shevelt was. That caused this whole what they call nowadays the revolution. The revolution was that the woman is not going to be treated as a chayis anymore. Absolutely right. It's not an object. It's a terrible thing with the existence of the Goyish Shevelt all these years. But in the Yiddish Shevelt, it's exactly the opposite. In the Yiddish Shevelt, we turn the Tumfakev, exactly the reverse of what goes on in the Goyish Shevelt. In the Yiddish Shevelt, it's exactly the reverse. The man is required to do what has to be done for his wife's enjoyment. Not the other way around, for the Goyish Shevelt, for his enjoyment, and she's just a shmata. It's the other way around. The husband has to see to it that he conducts himself in a fashion which will maximize the simcha and the hanah of his wife. That's our way is exactly the reverse. If anything, it's exactly the reverse. If anything, the man is an object, if anything. Because he is the one who has this obligation. So therefore, this is something which, of course, Hale of Yeshiva Bach is just getting married. It takes a while to know what these words mean. You tell them these words, what they don't mean. Baruch Hashem, this is the Kedushin and Tahara of Holy Yeshiva Bokharin and Holy Benos Yisrael. garbage that goes on in the street today. This is a beautiful thing, but you have to understand that these shilas can exist, and they're shilas like any other shilas. We believe strongly, that's why I'm talking about these matters, though they're very delicate, but there's nothing outside the context of the halacha. Nothing. The halacha discusses every possible thing. Everything. And Rabbanim, and I'm not a big Rav, you know, these big Rabbanim, you know, early Yisrael, they get chas all over the world. So I have a little shul and a few talmidim, and I get many of these kinds of questions. And the questions indicate that there's a lot of kedusha and a lot of tahara in Klal Yisrael. And it's something which is a very beautiful thing. This is the cornerstone of Klal Yisrael. This is the cornerstone of Klal Yisrael. And the Shulchan Aruch speaks about the importance of the husband seeing to it that the wife has as much hana as possible. And this, I mean, I'm talking to you people almost every day. I'm single, so I'll talk in details. But one of the things which this involves, which is her husband knows what's going on, your husband all will understand what's going on, is something which is a mitzvah which is called today, not a very common mitzvah in today's world, it's called patience. We all live in a world where people are patient in today's world. It's called patience, that's what it means. And then there's this very important, the Talmud Chacham has to understand that if he doesn't know what these things mean exactly, he has to go learn about it. And learn from Jewish sources. No need to go to any non-Jewish source. But I often answer these questions. All I know is the Kapsa the Gemara. I know Gemara, and then by the poetry we show them in the post, that's all. I don't have these secular background in these matters. But the Gemara tells you, if you have to understand the Gemara means, what talks riddles a little bit sometimes. It's a delicate matter. These are actual halachas. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. It goes without saying, and the Shulchan Aruch puts it over here, that a man cannot chas v'chalila involve himself with his wife against her will, or when he's angry at her, or when having a fight. That's ridiculous. And it wasn't sneers. The room has to be completely dark, as possible, and it has to remain completely between husband and wife. No one's allowed to know about what's going on with husband and wife. These are the Goyish Shabbat, it's unbelievable. What do I know? I don't know anything. But I can't believe it. I once went in to buy a pen in a hardware store. And these goyim, I don't know myself. They talk about their various exploits, you know, and then in an explicit language, you know. If I wouldn't have given the money, I would have run out already. You know, it's crazy. We, by us, this remains completely between the couple. It's ridiculous. You're a shilas, yes, the Rav? The Rav knows, if the Rav knows, he has to explain, he knows the answer to shilas. You very often get shilas. You need the shilas, these kinds of similar shilas, at the beginning of a marriage. But the people at the beginning of the marriage, they don't know what this is, they don't know what that is, they don't know what they did, what they didn't, they don't know. Baruch Hashem, it's a reflection on the Kedusha and on the Tzniyos and the Tahara, which always characterized the Am Yisrael, which unfortunately has become so sullied, so debased in the general world outside. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. And we have to do everything we possibly can to bring back the spirit of purity to Klal Yisrael. I should add that we start the rules of Hilchos Taras Mishpach, which we'll talk about in the second class. I don't want to stay, welcome. But I do believe strongly that when a woman is a kala and she's involved in various shilas, it's appropriate that the shilas she has in Taras Mishpach before her chasana should be handled by her and by her alone. I don't mean her alone herself. Father, a mother, a rav directly, or different rav, I mean to the exclusion of a chosn. I very feel often discomforted when a chosn comes to me with a shayla that is kalas and taras of a shkoch. It's not right. They shouldn't be discussing these very private matters. This shouldn't be the topic of discussion between Chassam and Kal. It's not right. I get the shot, I'm going to do it, I have to answer it. But it's not right. It reflects on a, to my understanding, a lack of appreciation of the sneers which should surround matters of this nature before the chassam to his province, and she should ask her shayla by her own house. Once she gets married, so then what's going to be? I'm going to take my chassam class, she's going to take her kala class, and all of a sudden when they get married, there's going to be a machlokes. What's going to be? It's much better that way than you compare notes for the 3 months. By the way, well, this one said this, this one said this. This should not be a topic of discussion for a chassam and a kala before they marry. It's inappropriate completely. That's what I think. Of course, part of this, of course, revolves around some other issues which are too often discussed with the chassam and kala, which I don't like as well. I spoke about it in the other class a little bit about the contraception at the beginning of a marriage. I think it's an outrage. I think it's horrendous, horrific, terrible. It goes against the only sort of Jewish marriage, in my opinion. It should be so obvious. It should be a topic of discussion. What? Who would you imagine if your grandfather, your grandmother, would have you contraception? It's ridiculous. We don't realize how the outside world has crept into our world. It's inconceivable. It's unimaginable that your grandfather tell your grandmother when they got married that they're going to use this method of contraception. It's an impossibility. Impossible. It's unheard of. Crazy. Now I hear so many times the chassam from chassam kala. Yes and no and maybe and I hear that people Muslims was about it. What's going on in this world? The whole world is going under. A very serious problem. A very serious problem. And, it's a shame. It really shouldn't be this way. I'd like to conclude with two things. One, as a sort of a seal for today's shiur, and one of us as a seam, if you will, to the entire shiur of the Rosh Hashanah. The seam of today's shiur is a beautiful mashal, which is given by the Sefer. Written by Rabbi Yaakov Milisa on Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim, as you know, is a mashal of the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people, but the mashal that's used is the man and woman. So the Poskim will say that the person should not give a little translation of Shir HaShirim, should not apply Shir HaShirim to a relationship between a particular man and a particular woman. So I'm very opposed to this. Took it from Shir HaShirim on a wedding invitation, or singing it at the chassam kala marching down. It's terrible. And Rav Soloveitchik that says once was fuming. I was standing next to him, all of a sudden the chassam is intoning that the chassam is marching down and the kala's going around. I go, what? Dodi li vanilo. And he says, up from the Gemara, he was muttering the whole time. It's terrible. And I always have this, one of my favorite stories. About a wedding invitation I once saw many, many years ago, which said, for the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Mayim Rabim Lo Yuchlu L'Chavos Es Ha'ahava U'Naharos L'Yishtafua. In the conjunction with this chassam kala, P.S. They got divorced. So it was not true that Mayim Rabim Lo Yuchlu L'Chavos was debate. It was a terrible thing. But what's it? So why did they pick Shir HaShirim? Your shirim should be X-rated. It's literally an X-rated. It's X-rated. Article that translated. They gave it. They explained it in terms of the nimshal directly. Give a beautiful mashal to the receivers. The mashal is like this. With a beautiful palace and a faraway island. The king lived on the island. And he had to leave to go back to the city. And he wanted to always remember the beautiful palace. What he did was. Commissioned a great artist to draw a picture of this beautiful palace. It was absolutely stunning, and he put it on his wall. Oh! Whenever he wanted to think about the palace in this faraway island, he looked at the picture, and it was a perfect likeness, so he felt good. Came along some graffiti experts and started marking up the picture. They drew all kinds of smug and junk and yep! So now whenever you look at the picture, you couldn't even think about the palace anymore, but it was such junk written on top of the picture, graffiti, so it was already unappealing to look at the picture, because he couldn't in his own mind separate the picture, the good part, from this junk which was written on top of it. So already that picture already now symbolizes dirt as opposed to symbolizing the beauty of the palace which was its original. Same thing over here. Shir HaShirim was used as a mashal for the relationship of Hashem to Klal Yisrael, because it's a beautiful picture. The relationship between husband and wife is a beautiful thing. It's unbelievable, it's exalted, it's wonderful. Even the physical aspect is so spiritual in nature. Came along the Goyim, and they started drawing graffiti all over the picture with all their lewd advertisements and suggestive commercials and the junk and the dirt and the schmutz that you see and you hear about all over the world. Yuck! They made it into the sewer. So now it's impossible for you to view this relationship in any other way because you're colored by what's going on around you. So the mashal is a beautiful mashal to Hashem and the Jewish people. But the people ruined it. And therefore you don't understand why this mashal is being used. Because unfortunately we've been ruined in the outside world. That's the seal, if you will, on this shir today. I see him in the Chol Shabbos. We spent many, many, many hours together learning the halacha for Shabbos Kodesh. Those who came from the beginning of the year, we spoke about the bits of Zohar, the positives. Those who came from the end, we also spoke a bit about the negatives. But Shabbos, it's very important that you recognize and realize there's much more in the sum of its part, in the Lamatas Malachas, with the Xeris Terabonim, with Kiddush and the Nefer Mishnah and the Neiris and the Zuda Shabbos. Shabbos is the center of Jewish life. Jewish life is centered around Shabbos. That Shabbos should give Kiddush and Tahar not only for itself, but for the rest of the week. The rest of the week should tell us before Shabbos, it's after Shabbos. Shabbos is coming, Shabbos just was. Shabbos must be a very spiritual day. Unfortunately, in America, there are two chesronos. Even in our Shomesh Shabbos community, one, people don't appreciate the Kedusha Shabbos. They may be what we call not Mechalal Shabbos, but they're not Shomesh Shabbos. They don't wait for Shabbos, they don't watch the Shabbos, they don't make sure Shabbos is passed on to the next generation properly, they don't make sure that the Shabbos table has mirrors. They go in there, just eat, and then go to sleep, maybe the newspapers. If they have to be a certain ambient, even without such a big different Torah, it's going to turn the rest of the week. But the Shabbos should be with mirrors, Shabbos should be with Kedusha, it should be a spirit of sanctity and holiness surrounding the Shabbos table. And the people who dominate should understand that Shabbos is different. And they should understand that Shabbos is a time you have to go properly. I like these guys, they go to Shul on Shabbos, they go to dress change, they have you to Shul afterwards, the Shabbos. You know what I'm saying, how it applies to women in the same way. Shabbos is a holy day, and you have to look for Shabbos. The Arab Shabbos should be holy, and the preparation to Shabbos should be holy, and the afterglow of Shabbos should be holy. It's very, very important. In fact, end with where Shabbos begins in his Akdama. One of the Gefarshim quotes of one of the Askamas in the Akdama says, the Klal Yisrael keeps two Shabbosos beyond the goal. We receive redeemed immediately. It's two Shabbos. So again, that means just one Shabbos will be free. Two Shabbos. Two different midrash. So that was two Shabbos. So the Mepharshim explained that two Shabbos mean two dimensions of Shabbos. Shabbos in the strict sense of not doing the malacha, and Shabbos in the more general sense of keeping it on the holy day. Or Shabbos on Shabbos, and Shabbos during the week, the impact of Shabbos has during the week. So it's my bracha, my tefillah. All of us should improve on the fulfillment of both dimensions of Shabbos and the discourse of Shabbos to a rule of Shnei Rav Yerim. See you with the Shabbos.